And this is Noongar Radio 100.9 FM. Wherever you're listening, welcome to Law Matters for a brand new year. Jodie Hoffman with you for the next hour, and looking forward to returning to the airwaves with you all this year. And the program comes to you from the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia every fortnight between 11 and 12 on a Wednesday, and repeated on Sunday nights at 9 o'clock. And what we aim to do with this program is show you a greater insight into the legal system here in Western Australia, meet some of the people who are involved in it, and at all times it reminds you of all of the services that are offered at our 15 offices throughout the state from the ALS of WA. Coming up on the program today, a little later, CEO Dennis Eggington will join us for a bit of a reflection on how far we've come in almost 40 years and what to expect for the year ahead. An exciting year for us, because later in the year we will celebrate our 40th anniversary, which is absolutely incredible when you think of all of the people who must have been involved in setting up this service so many years ago. Shortly on the program, Peter Collins has a chat with us, the Director of Legal Services at the ALS, and we'll also be letting you know all about the Royal Commission into Institutional Responses to Child Sexual Abuse and the assistance that can be offered by our staff as well. Do stay tuned. Let's have a listen to this one from Fiona Councillor, and when we return, Pete Collins from the Aboriginal Legal Service. This is the Law Matters radio program, and for the first program for the year, I'd like to welcome to the program, he's pretty hard to get, this guy, Peter Collins, the Director of our Legal Services. How are you going, Pete?
Good, thanks, Jodie. Thanks for having you on the program, and hello to all your listeners.
We've all returned to the airwaves, refreshed sort of, from big breaks over Christmas and New Year. Just before we came on air, Pete, I was saying, you know, how long you been with the ALS now? And you were saying, for the most part, since 1996.
Earlier than that, Jade, I started in 1995.
95.
So I've had two little spells away, but yeah, on deck for nearly 20 years.
Now, coming from Melbourne, hugely different, I imagine, to doing the same job over in Victoria.
Enormously different. I think one of the big things is that how important the ALS is here in WA in comparison to, say, the situation in Victoria. But it's a lot harder place being a black fella in Western Australia than it, I think, is in Victoria, being a Koori person. It's pretty tough from a law and order point of view, you know.
It is, and I'm wondering if you've seen a lot of changes in Aboriginal involvement within the justice system in terms of legislation that does seem to trap a lot of our people in the system in those years. Is much changed?
It's hard to see how things have got any better, which is a pretty sad thing to have to say over that period of time. There are more laws that trap Aboriginal people in the justice system than there were back in 95, I think. A lot more laws. And if you're trapping more Aboriginal people in the system, that means inevitably more Aboriginal people are being locked up, and that's reflected in the stats, because there hasn't been much changes in the stats over a long period of time in terms of the number of Aboriginal adults in custody, but also kids as well. You know, it hovers with kids at around 70% of the kids in custody are Aboriginal, which is a really appalling statistic when you think about it. And of course, over the last couple of years, there's been move-on notices introduced which have trapped people in the system, and more recently, prohibited behaviour orders as well. So, and mandatory sentencing, you can throw that into the mix as well. So there's lots of laws out there which trap people in the system. And the other thing is that it's more police. And if there's more police, especially in regional and remote communities, more blackfellas are going to get caught up in things.
And you only have to look around in Perth, and I reckon it's probably the same in a lot of regional areas, infrastructure going up everywhere, and of course that's included the building of more prisons.
Absolutely.
Which I'm sure that there are a lot of other solutions besides just the building of prisons, and I guess that's where sort of justice reinvestment and different programs come into play that seem to be getting a lot more support, but still some stumbling blocks in getting them over the line to actually implement a lot of stuff, hey?
I think so. Look, I think there's a couple of aspects to that. I think one of the things that strikes me is that as WA and Perth especially becomes more and more affluent, with people having more and more money, those on the margins those at the bottom end of the socioeconomic scale become more and more marginalised because people become more intolerant. They want to protect their little empire, their beautiful house and all that sort of stuff, and there's not much empathy and respect and consideration given to people who are less fortunate than those. So a lot of Aboriginal people are trapped at the bottom of that socioeconomic scale, so life gets harder for them. And you're right, if you want to protect those empires, the way government approaches it, unfortunately, is to build more prisons. But prisons aren't the answer because prisons don't reform people and prisons don't result in people getting out, staying away from crime. In fact, the statistics indicate that there's a greater likelihood that someone who's been to jail will reoffend and go back to jail in the future, which means self-evidently that our communities aren't safer. And it's very expensive. It costs a lot of money to lock people up, and that's why justice reinvestment is starting to resonate. But I think the big issue here in WA is that while there's been some acknowledgement in some quarters about the importance of considering a justice reinvestment model, it hasn't transferred into reality. So there hasn't been the dollars invested by government and the resources placed by government into justice reinvestment type approaches to justice issues, and I think that's the next big challenge.
We're going to touch on some specific areas today, such as prohibited behaviour orders and mandatory sentencing. But before we do that, Pete, obviously there was a change of government in Australia last year. So we now have an Abbott government, and unfortunately with that came some cuts to Aboriginal legal services around the country.
That's right. On the day before the election, Joe Hockey, the now...
Treasurer.
Announced that there'd be a $42 million cut to the national program which funds ALS in WA and all the other Aboriginal legal services in the states and territories. So a massive cut was announced completely out of the blue. No one had any idea that this was coming. A lot of really good work's been done by our national body to persuade government not to go through with it, and we've had some success, but it's looking like cuts of about $13 to $9 million over the next couple of years will still be implemented. And what they're going to direct those cuts at, they say, is to cut the policy and law reform work that Aboriginal legal services do. And that's really important work because the day-to-day grind for us here in WA is for the most part criminal law work, going to court, appearing for people and trying our best to keep them out of jail. But on the flip side, there's that really important work in trying to inform and lobby government and other important stakeholders about the sorts of factors that bring Aboriginal people into contact with the justice system and in turn leads them to going to jail. So that policy and law reform work which we do, and we don't employ a lot of people to do it. I wish we had more resources, but currently there are only two roles within the entire organisation, but the indications are that they want to slash that, which is incredibly disappointing because that's the voice that we have to try and influence government to consider justice reinvestment, to consider alternatives, and the indications are that that's going to be stripped away. And it's hard not to think that they want to muzzle organisations like ours because they don't like the criticism. You know, in another forum, funding for refugee advocacy law centres has been completely slashed. So again, there've been critics of government too. But the other really concerning thing, Jody, is that even if we weren't to do that sort of work, that's not going to result in the funding savings to reflect the size of the cuts. So there's a real concern that once these cuts are implemented, that they'll affect frontline services. In other words, there won't be as many Aboriginal legal service staff on the ground at courts to appear for people. And I think, you know, it's pretty inevitable again that will lead to more people going to jail.
That's incredible, isn't it, when you think that some of our lawyers in country areas can see up to 80 clients in one day. How can you push that even further by reducing staff numbers?
That's right. You know, it's an ongoing and really worrying trend. But for example, in the Pilbara, there's an additional magistrate coming up from Perth every month to accommodate the numbers of matters in Karratha and Roebourne courts, and there's an expectation that ALS be there, but we simply haven't got the staff. So the issue for us is that we're being stretched and stretched more and more thinly all along the line to try and assist our clients, but we're not provided with the resourcing and the staff to be able to do it. And you just wonder, at what point do you have to draw the line in the sand? And it's happened here in Perth, as you know. You know, it's really unfortunate, but we don't go to Joondalup Court anymore. We don't go to Midland. We don't go to Freo. We don't go to Rockingham. And that's only because we haven't got the people to be able to do it. And it's, you know, not a very satisfactory state of affairs that those Aboriginal people who are going to those courts are now represented by legal aid, and we're not there. But that's, I think, one of the realities of these funding cuts, is that we can't be everywhere. We just haven't got enough people.
And there's a lot of other work that the ALS does throughout the year that couldn't be done without the support that we receive from some pro bono law firms around the place. And I'm talking about, you know, like a few years ago with the Redress WA scheme, and in more recent times, the landmark Collard matter in terms of stolen generations in the High Court. It's so much goodwill and support and assistance that people want to give the ALS that it's amazing that doesn't rub off back onto government, to see that actually, you know, it's not just the ALS standing up all the time and saying, this isn't working, this isn't fair. It's across the board that people are saying, hang on a minute, there's huge disparities between what's happening with Aboriginal people in the justice system and non-Aboriginal.
Absolutely. I mean, the help that we get from pro bono law firms, for example, with Redress and also with the Collard Stolen Generation case, has been phenomenal. And we're incredibly grateful for it. But that irks me a bit, because there's an expectation by government that these pro bono law firms pick up the slack. So they fill the space that's been created by government through a lack of funding and support. And you just wonder where their priorities really lie. I mean, Mr. Abbott said that he was going to be the Minister for Aboriginal Affairs when he became Prime Minister, and yet they're prepared to implement these funding cuts, which will really cut us to the bone in many ways. So it's hard not to think there's a bit of double standards and some hypocrisy in that sort of approach. And look, there's been lots of, you know, typically, as is the case with so many Aboriginal organisations, there's all sorts of scrutiny placed on ALS about the way we spend our dollars, and there's been lots of government inquiries into how efficient ALSs are, and overwhelmingly those assessments and reports and so on have indicated that we're very efficient in the way we do business, more efficient arguably than, say, Legal Aid, who are funded, you know, 5 to 6 times more than what we are. But that doesn't seem to translate into a willingness to be able to fund us properly, so that we can not only do our job but expand our services, because there's so many areas of law where Aboriginal people are really suffering and struggling, where we can't help them. For example, in tenancy law, that's probably the one that really stands out for me. The issues that so many Aboriginal families have with Homes West, and the disgraceful situation where Aboriginal people are being left homeless by pretty heartless decisions by Homes West. I'd love to be able to, for us to be able to help Aboriginal families in those situations, but we simply haven't got the staff. So a lot of the time, despite all the efforts of tenancy advice bureaus and community legal centres and that sort of thing, Aboriginal people aren't getting the legal assistance that they require and deserve.
I'm speaking with Peter Collins, Director of Legal Services at the Aboriginal Legal Service of WA. This is the Law Matters program on 6NME 100.9 FM. You're tuned to the Law Matters radio program brought to you each fortnight by the Aboriginal Legal Service of WA. Our first program back for 2014, I'm pleased to say, and Director of Legal Services Peter Collins is in the studio with us. And Pete, I thought it was important to touch on a couple of the big issues that seem to be affecting Aboriginal people within the justice system, and the first is prohibited behaviour orders, hey?
Yeah. Oh, look, these prohibited behaviour orders tremendously concerning. These are these orders where if someone's committed what's described as an antisocial offence over the last couple of years, an application can be made to the court for an order preventing them from, say, for example, going into Northbridge or the Perth CBD. The order can be in place for 2 years. If you go into Perth CBD or Northbridge and when you're banned from going there, you commit a criminal offence, you can get jail for it. And the really worrying thing, of course, is that these orders have been targeted against incredibly vulnerable Aboriginal people in our community, the homeless, people with alcohol and drug problems, people with mental illnesses, people who really haven't got a capacity to, because of their issues, a capacity to comply with these orders, and they're getting locked up. So that's another example of a new piece of legislation, as I touched upon a moment ago, which is really disproportionately impacting upon, as I say, really vulnerable Aboriginal people. And I think the stats from Parliament indicate that Aboriginal people are far and away the highest group of people within the community targeted by these orders. So that's a real worry.
And in some cases, it's not just the one order, is it?
That's right. Well, you know, on top of that, people have move-on orders, which have the same effect, albeit just for, you know, 12 hours or 24 hours. But, you know, we've got clients who are homeless, who live on the streets of Northbridge, who have PBO orders made against them, who are, in effect, in breach of the order 24/7 because Northbridge is where they live. And that's where all their social networks are. They have other family members who live on the street with them, so there's a great deal of comfort and support provided by virtue of that, even though it's not an ideal situation. Many of the other agencies which provide them with assistance are in Northbridge. So these people are very vulnerable to being arrested every day of the year, and we all know where they end up eventually.
It's not just the homeless, it's those suffering from a mental illness. Of course, many of those people are homeless anyway.
That's right.
People who may be intoxicated.
That's right.
People who may be from out of country and aren't aware of street names and all of that. They just know that this particular part might be a meeting place or where you can sort of catch up with people from your own country or meet new friends.
That's right.
In a different state. But it is very disheartening, Pete, isn't it, when you... Of course, when people from these categories are going to be given these notices, it's a pretty good chance they're going to be breached.
It's a certainty. And that's what's occurred. Look, can I give you an example which I think hopefully highlights just how terrible these laws can be? We had a client who has a really serious mental illness. Our advice to him was to try and fight the making of the order. He didn't want to do that. He was in custody at the time. He said, look, I'm happy to wear it. So the order was made. The order stopped him from going to a suburban shopping centre because he'd been in a bit of strife there. Nothing terribly major, but he had been in a bit of trouble there. He gets out of custody. He goes to this suburban shopping centre. He doesn't do anything else except go there. But he's not allowed to, so he's charged with breaching this PBO. He's refused bail because he's homeless. And he goes before Midland Court. Now, we don't go there, and his case gets adjourned. And for whatever reason, he spends 11 days in custody. for just going to a shopping centre. And when he gets sentenced, he's fined $1,500 with a warning from the magistrate. If he does it again, he'll get locked up. Now, that just seems to me to be a completely over-the-top outcome for something that, if you didn't have the order in place, would be entirely lawful going to a shopping centre. So this is how these laws are going to really impact very harshly on these sorts of people.
And are you seeing individuals getting handed out multiple notices?
Look, there's a lot of these people who are homeless and living on the streets who've had hundreds and hundreds of move-on orders and have breached countless numbers of them and gone before the courts. And if that's the case with move-on orders, it's going to be the same with PBOs, but it'll culminate in these people being sent to jail. You know, it's not the answer. And again, the cynic in me, and it's pretty easy to become cynical in this job over the years, is it's hard not to think, well, as there's this push to gentrify Northbridge, to get more tourists in, to get more people with money into the area, that these blackfellas don't fit with that image that they're trying to promote. So the solution is, let's get them out of there. But if you push them out of Northbridge, where do they go? Where do they go? And 'cause all the services for disadvantaged people in Perth are almost exclusively concentrated in this part of the world. These people are going to be pushed to the margins where there aren't those services available to them, and, you know, they're going to really struggle. They're struggling already as it is.
Which is what we've seen in the past anyway.
That's right.
With people sort of being banished to the fringes, sort of out of sight, out of mind.
That's right.
Yeah.
And that's very much the mentality, I think. I don't think there's too much care about the welfare of these people, which highlights this point. I'm really strongly of the view that if you want to deal with people who are suffering these sorts of problems, why don't you try and concentrate on the factors, the catalyst for them getting to where they are? You know, provide people with proper alcohol and drug counselling, which is culturally appropriate, which is going to get a result. Provide proper resources for people with mental illness. You know, you've only got to look at what the tragic incident in Victoria over the last couple of days, where that fellow with the mental illness killed his son, to realise how big that problem is. But it's brushed under the carpet, and it's particularly brushed under the carpet when it comes to Aboriginal people, because they haven't got the political clout that others in the community have.
Yeah. Before we wrap up with you, Pete, I do want to talk about mandatory sentencing and just remind people where things are at in Western Australia and the seriousness of some offences in terms of how the law deals with it here.
Look, mandatory sentencing's a very, very significant part of the system here, as we know. There's going to be laws tabled before, I think, the next sitting of Parliament to impose mandatory minimum 15-year jail. That means people go to jail for 15 years for violent home invasions. But on a more fundamental level, just in closing, I just want to emphasise with your listeners how some of these other mandatory sentencing laws work. I mean, if you are in a car driving and the police tell you to stop and you don't, and you drive recklessly, which means, you know, for example, driving 30 metres over the speed limit, which could mean that you're driving, say, 80 kilometres an hour in a 50k zone, if you get caught, you're going to go to jail for a minimum of 6 months. No matter whether you've been in trouble before or whatever the reason you might be driving, none of that counts. You go to jail for 6 months. So there are a lot of clients that we're finding who are being caught by these sorts of laws. Again, they're not the answer, and they're capable of causing great injustice, because there are lots of people who just make the single mistake, but they're going to go to jail. And I think there's a push nationally for mandatory sentencing. For example, with those one-punch deaths in New South Wales, they're going to introduce laws to make mandatory jail terms for that sort of stuff. It's everywhere, but it's no good. Again, it's not the answer. Locking people up's not the answer.
All right. We'll leave it there, Pete. But look, thank you so much for joining us on our first program. I know it's difficult, court commitments and whatnot and everything else that's going on at the ALS all the time, but we look forward to chatting with you again here on Law Matters in the near future. And thanks for all your talk today.
No worries. Thanks a lot, Jodie. Good on you.
100.9 FM, Noongar Radio. This is Law Matters on 6NME. Jodie Hoffman with you this hour. And the program is brought to you by the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia. Coming up very shortly, we'll have a chat with CEO Dennis Eggington. 100.9 FM, Law Matters. And welcome to the chair right now, the CEO of the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia, Dennis Eggington. Dennis, thanks for your time.
Hey, how are you, Jodie? And hello to all our listeners today.
Good to be back on the airwaves for another year. This program did start back in 2010.
Yeah, but I remember us doing the last show for the year, and now we're doing the first show for this year, and it just seems so long ago.
It does. Well, it sort of is, but it is great to be back on air. And Dennis, we were just having a yarn with Peter Collins, Director of Legal Services, who provided the overview on the funding cuts and the impact that that does have on our legal services around the country, and highlighting some really important issues like PBOs and mandatory sentencing, and just talking about the general state of the justice system with Aboriginal people and how it continues to impact. Pete was saying that he has been here on and off since 95, for the most part since 95, which is shortly before you came on board in 96. It's a long way back, isn't it, but still a long way to go.
And on Thursday we celebrate someone who's had 25 years with us as well. I know that Kevin Blurton down there in Bunbury, hello to anyone who's from the Wiradjuri mob down that way, but Kevin is like 26 years or something like that with us, and I think that that shows that there are lots of really principled people around who will continue to do as much as they can to overcome some of those things that Peter talked about. But I guess generally speaking, that it's pretty tough times these days for our mob with the defunding of Congress, the new advisory group, which people aren't warming to, and some of the real issues about, sovereignty and a way forward for us all. And, mainstream Australia continues to, get into our skin and under our skin, and it's very, very difficult. But there is lots and lots of good things happening. John Pilcher's film, I saw that not long ago. That was a great film. Hope to be able to show that to the staff this afternoon if we can get the technical expertise to get it all up and running. I think it's a really important film for non-Aboriginal people to look at, but for us mob, it gives us strength and shows that there are people like Peter Collins and John Pilger and others around that do care about us and care about our rightful place in this country.
Dennis, you do travel around the country a fair bit and internationally as well. I'm just wondering, since the change of government last year, whether there is a general feeling of unsettlement within our people across the country in terms of uncertainty with jobs, ongoing employment, future for our kids, and the general sort of financial makeup of the country at the moment.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I think probably more so where the vast majority of our people's which is the big cities and large urban areas. There seems to be a fair bit of, concern still with lots and lots of the communities in the Northern Territory over the intervention. People are still feeling really irky about that, and that's one of the good things about the new Pilger film. It shows the fallacy of the whole intervention in the Northern Territory. So there is this lot of government control and what we would call mission managers that are taking control of Aboriginal affairs and looking for what they believe is a better way forward for us, which is employment, jobs, education, and the main thing that we've lost is that, not lost, but the main thing that governments now aren't even in entertaining, and that is the issue around a rights-based approach to our future and this country's future. And that's sad, and I think that's upset lots of people. It's difficult where you've got systems that don't allow you to get an education, a proper education, and government are saying, well, that's what you need, you know, we're going to put all of our resources and money into getting Aboriginal people educated so that we can get them jobs. And a clear example is, I think, in a place called Wadi in the Northern Territory, where they encouraged all the kids to come to school the next day, and when all the kids turned up, there wasn't enough chairs for them to sit on, there wasn't enough teachers to teach them, and there wasn't enough room to put them all in. So, and I would think that in places like the western suburbs of Sydney and other places where you've got 50,000 Koori people just living in, you know, like about 10 suburbs, this biggest mob of people, that, you know, you're just getting a basic education, which probably, you know, is the same sort of valued education system that lots of Australians get, which is no place for blackfellas, no real ownership of the country by Aboriginal people. You know, Captain Cook discovered Australia type of education.
I just forgot what I was going to say then. I was going to say, with the start of a new year, Dennis, and having been in the role of CEO for so long, how do you approach a new year in terms of trying to maintain that fresh approach to remain optimistic, work with government and key stakeholders to ensure the best outcomes for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people within the justice system? I mean, over 100 staff located at 15 offices around the country. It's important to stay optimistic, isn't it, and future focused?
Well, there's actually science around a way forward. And what I mean by that is that there's enough evidence around a concept called a constant minority voice makes better change than huge big rallies and getting people, you know, all stirred up and get up there and say all the things that, you know, we like to hear. You know, let's fight the guy, let's fight this and let's fight that and land rights. And the reality is that people who are consistently saying the same message over and over, year after year after year, actually instigate change better than those big one-off rallies and things like that. They're important. I mean, and we've seen just recently with, you know, the issue around culling of sharks and other things that people still need to have a right to rally and a right to, congregate with others and tell people how they really feel. But so you stay positive by continuing to make slow change, to get to people who you know that are influential and continue just to let them know that things still aren't all right. And you get little wins along the way. You get, you get people who say things or do things, or, you know, you win an award. Our organisation, of course, has won a number of awards over the years. And those things just keep you positive and keep you focused. But there is actual evidence and science around this idea of just be consistent, just be constant, and you can make more change in the long term than you know, sort of beating the drums at once every now and then.
It was absolutely huge honour, wasn't it, to win a National Human Rights Award for community organisation. And you know, nobody does what they do to get awards, but it was wonderful for the ALS here in WA to be acknowledged nationally with such an esteemed award, because it really does, you know, our whole focus is about human rights, isn't it?
Well, it's about, and that's what the core philosophy of the organisation is. It's the emancipation of our peoples through advocating for the rights of Australia's First Peoples. And it is about that. It's about... You know, you represent people who come in who have got themselves in trouble with the law, or their marriage is broken down, or, you know, they've had a car accident. You provide a service to those. But underlying all of that is this, you know, why is there over-representation of Aboriginal people in the justice system? Well, it's because of an unjust system, an unjust civil society that we've got. So you have to keep tackling the bigger issues, and hopefully at some stage, you know, you'll make changes. But of course, one of the fundamental stones, if you want, is strong, healthy families, and that really means massive change in the way resources are distributed and wealth is distributed in this country. But that's probably some of the things that the organisation has been able to keep focused on, and that, eventually someone said, right, you deserve an award for it. And it was good, but, I mean, there's all of those other people that were there, you know, the Ian Thorpe Foundation and people who are individually make documentaries that change people's values and change people's lives, whether it's, people that are mentally impaired or have a disability. Some of the human rights awards go to people like that. So, yeah, it was pretty cool to be there and a part of that. And, you have to have a history in it. And of course, coming up in November, we're celebrating 40 years of the Aboriginal Legal Service in this state. That's 40 years, that's a couple of generations. And you would hope that that eventually somewhere down the track that things improve, that our legal service is not really needed. But I can't see that happening for some time yet.
It's incredible to think, and there's obviously too many people to name, but how many people from our communities and from the legal fraternity and government and the whole range of areas have been involved in the legal service in that 40 years, hey? Some incredible people, and planning is underway for the 40th celebrations later in the year, and of course we won't be letting anything out about that yet because it's all still in the early stages, but do watch this space because we'll be letting people know about what is planned, and it's going to be a big celebration, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, and Derby Yerrigan had their 40th. So all of our service organisations that sprung up in the late 60s have all now been around for 40 years, but the vast majority have gone, and it's really only the legal services and the medical services that are left. And they're the two areas, I guess, where we not only provide a service to our community, but in some twisted way we provide a service to the general community by, I guess, letting governments placate their responsibilities and their resources. In all honesty, there should be much more money going into health services at the front end of the problem. Money's going into the justice area at the front end of the problem, which is, once again, strengthening families, breaking cycles of sickness and breaking cycles that put people into the justice system. We've survived. We're here for 40 years, and you've got to be a credit to all of those wonderful people that have had something to do with the legal service over all of those years.
Dan, as a Noongar man and as the head of the ALS, what are your hopes for the next 12 months with the organisation?
We're going through some massive reviews at the moment, organisational reviews, looking at how we're going to cope with the up-and-coming funding cuts that have been announced by the federal government, what types of work are important to us, do people still want us to make sure we're at court and representing people who are facing the criminal justice system. What is it about that criminal justice system people want us to represent? Somewhere where we're obviously, someone might be on their third time drink driving compared to someone who's, got into a bit of a scuffle with the police because the police have been a bit oppressive and they've been charged with assault public officer. What sort of matters do people want us to do in the future, or are people wanting us to concentrate more on, the systemic discrimination matters out there, the housing matters and, public space matters and things like that? I don't think we'll be able to do all of those in the future. If we do, we're going to have to put little tiny bits of money into each area and it's not going to make an effective approach. So I think community have got to come back and let us know over the next 12 months or so through their elected members what might ALS look like in the future, because we're going to have to change, there's no doubts.
All right. Dennis, we'll leave it there, but thanks for popping in on the first program for 2014. And if you would like any more information about services provided by the Aboriginal Legal Service in this state, you can check out our website at www.als.org.au. You can free call us from anywhere in the state, 1800 019 900. All of our radio programs can be heard after broadcast on our website as well. And a big thank you to the mob at Noongar Radio for the ongoing opportunity to produce this program. And we've got lots of exciting guests for you to meet throughout the year and lots of information to pass on to you and hopefully an entertaining program to bring you as well. And Dennis will make sure of that, won't you, Dennis?
Yeah, I certainly will, Jode. And as they say in the cutter, that's all, folks.
Before we finish up on our Law Matters program today, I imagine that many of you have heard about the Royal Commission into Institutional Responses to Child Sexual Abuse. Now, you may know somebody who was sexually abused as a child in an institution, and you may want to find out more information about this Royal Commission. Now, just so you're aware, institutions could include missions or government agencies or churches or orphanages, schools, sporting clubs, foster care, or any other organisations that provided activities or services where adults had contact with children. If you would like to find out more about the Royal Commission into Institutional Responses to Child Sexual Abuse, we've got a woman by the name of Suzanne Randall working out of our head office in Perth. She's a field officer and she's there to answer all your questions and talk you through whether it's something that you would like to be involved in or not. So I'll give you our free call number, 1-800-019-900, 1-800-019-900, Suzanne Randall at the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia about that Royal Commission and whether or not it's a decision that you would like to become involved in that. Thank you for your company. We look forward to it again in a fortnight's time here on Noongar Radio. Enjoy the rest of your day and evening here on 6NME, won't you?